Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Kamidogu podcast. I am Christopher Beljanovsky, and joining me in the virtual podcasting booth, as always, is the man, the myth, the legend, Toasty.
Toasty!
If you're new here, hit follow or subscribe to join the family, and be sure to check out Kamidogu on social media. Without further ado, Toasty, take it away.
Good day, everyone. It's wonderful to be back, and we're super glad that you're able to join us for this current special. The Mortal Kombat film in 1995 is nothing short of an instant classic. For all the loyal MK95 fans, we've struck gold today, my friends. We are accompanied by Francois Petit. We all know of our favorite blue-colored Lin Kuei member. The very distinctive, incredibly capable Cryomancer, Sub-Zero. We're all joined to discuss this role and explore what it was like behind the scenes of the movie. Francois is kind of a big deal when it comes to the production of this feature, as you will find out shortly. So, let's slide over to the juicy details and see what this gentleman has to say. Welcome, welcome! Here we are, joined with Sub-Zero himself. I'd like to start off by saying thank you for joining today's episode, Francois.
Well, it's a pleasure, you know, and it's been a long time, Mortal Kombat. I mean, I have so many stories about this movie and these video games for the last, I would say, 29 years.
Wow.
So it's been a long time, believe
yeah.
me.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
It started much before the movie, actually. Much before the movie.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, much before Larry Kazanov was a good friend of mine. He used to be the president of Lightstorm Entertainment.
Okay.
Okay. Lightstorm Entertainment was the company of James Cameron. James Cameron was a patient of mine.
Oh.
And did Hamilton, too. And that's how it started. One day, they called me and they said, well, Larry Kazanov, Mortal Kombat. I said, what are you talking about? And, you know, I'm a doctor. So, yeah. And he said, yeah, Mortal Kombat. What is it? What is it? It's a video game. A video game? Yeah, it's martial art. Martial art is my life since I'm 4 years old.
Yeah.
And I said, never heard about it. I have no idea. So Larry finally, you know, called me and he says, let's go to the arcade. The arcade? What are we doing in the arcade? So we went to the Santa Monica arcade and we play Mortal Kombat in an arcade. That's how the whole movie started.
Wow.
So imagine that. That was much before the movie.
Wow.
And
did
then
you all
we met the two brothers who did the show Mortal Kombat. We did the video Mortal Kombat. We meet with them. I think it was in 93, I think something like this. Yeah, Mexican guys. You don't know that, huh?
Is that Ed and John?
I don't remember the name. It's so long ago. Imagine. We talk about almost 30 years ago. But nice guys. And they did the video game. And then Larry got the exclusivity of shooting a movie with them. And then they said, okay. Then I helped Larry Kazanov for a year and a half to do this movie.
Yeah.
I was not supposed to be in a movie at all, but because my forte is martial art, and because of Gold's Gym and because of my life in martial art, he needed me. And then that's how we started doing the whole thing, you know.
Wow.
It's funny. It's funny. And then everything happened for a reason.
Yeah. So Francois, tell us, what type of martial arts did you study and what do you specialize in?
Well, I started in January 1955.
Mm. Wow.
So that's 67 years ago I started. Imagine.
Wow.
I was a kid. I was a youngster.
Yeah.
And I was raised half of my life with Japanese masters. At that time in France, it was very, very, very few martial artists. We're talking about the 50s, you know, early 50s. And to make a long story short, the grandson of the Soke in Japanese means headmaster. He's the highest of the highest in martial art. There's only four in the world, one per federation. Okay, karate, jiu-jitsu, judo, and aikido. There's one Soke per federation. They are Tenzan, Judan. There's only four. He was even higher than that. He was 80, at that time, 87, I think, in 55. He was born in the 19th century, and he was the head of the Goshin Jiu-Jitsu, bodyguard of the emperor. Oh. And he was a shiatsushi. Shiatsushi means a doctor of medicine for the battlefield. Huh. Practicing shiatsu as a surgery, not a massage, as a surgery. Okay. And of the father of Hirohito, of the emperor. And old Japan didn't have the right to practice martial art. All the countries of the Axis after World War II didn't have the right to have an army, they don't have to have an air force, you haven't have a navy, nothing. And Japan was a part of it, okay?
Yeah.
And the first country that allowed martial artists to practice was France. Why? Because at that time, the prime minister was a judo practitioner. And he was practicing always with Japanese person before World War II. So he begged De Gaulle, the president, to have all those masters, samurai from the 19th century, head officer, executive officers, coming to France and practice their own martial art because it was a part of the army. And the grandson was a rugby man. My father was a rugby man. And they met as a rugby team. And I was very agitated. And my father was telling me, I remember as yesterday, my son thinks he's John Wayne. He's breaking everything at home. And a grandson tell him, give it to me. I take him to my grandfather and my father, and we're going to raise him through the samurai discipline. That's how I started, and I was 4 years old.
Wow.
And when the first time I arrived over there, and everybody was a samurai, the real, real samurai from the 19th century. Imagine, and at that time, there's no TV, there's no radio, there's nothing. You know, and I'm seeing those people wearing dresses, akama, doggies, long hair, you know, yeah. Japanese. I was, where am I, you know? And that's how I started. I was the only kid, and I started martial arts with masters from the 19th century and
wow.
real samurai. And
that's incredible.
I stayed with them for 14 years. And then eventually, of course, the sake died. His father became the sake. Then eventually Henri Courtine, who just died, was a president of the Federation, World Federation of Judo, tens down, Henri Courtine, three-time gold medal, was my sensei in judo. I did 25 years of judo. And was with them. He became a professor in this martial art world, you know, of Japanese, yes. And eventually became the Federation, you know, years after. But yes. I was there every day, 5 days a week, 2.5 hours a day since I was 4 years old. Now wow. I'm going to be 71 years old, and I practice 3 hours a day, 7 days a week. I practice all the time. I did judo, karate, and jiu-jitsu.
Okay.
And Japanese jiu-jitsu, the real samurai jiu-jitsu, you know.
Right.
And I did 25 years of judo and karate and jiu-jitsu. I never stopped. So I've been practicing for 67 years. I'm a ninth dan in jiu-jitsu, eighth dan in karate, third dan in judo.
Wow. That's incredible. So aside from martial arts, you're also, I believe, a personal trainer. And if I'm not mistaken, you've also trained a number of stars such as Arnold Schwarzenegger and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not a personal trainer. I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher. I teach personal trainer. I'm a part of Gold's Gym,
okay.
You know, Mecca in Venice. I'm from Venice, California. And I created in the 80s and late 80s the division of martial art for all the Gold's Gym in the world. And I was the head of the division of martial art for all the Gold's Gym in the world.
Mm.
And the head dojo was the Hombo Dojo. It's called Hombo Dojo, was at the Mecca in Gold's Gym in Venice. That's where my dojo is. So from there, I was teaching everybody who is someone, you know, and you name it, all of them. And on top of that, I was a doctor for WWF. So
yeah.
I got all the guys, you know, from Ted DiBiase to Andre the Giant to Hulk Hogan to The Rock to Stone Cold, Mick Foley, everybody.
So you've met everybody.
They were my patients and also students. you know, yeah. It's a small world.
So, jumping into Mortal Kombat, I understand, as you kind of said earlier, you were never originally intended to be Sub-Zero. No, it practically just happened by fluke. Could you tell us more elaborately why that was?
Well, because of my relation with Larry Kazanoff, I was more invested of my time doing all the choreography. Okay, the teaching, the training, and hiring the people. You know, hiring who is going to be the Barakas, who are going to be the second leads, who are going to be the best martial artist. And, okay, you have to understand something. This is the first real martial art movie done in Hollywood, okay? Before, it was just nothing, okay? So they wanted to have, Larry Kazanoff wanted to have the biggest martial art movie ever done in America. And he didn't know anything about martial art at all. Sure. And so I had to explain him everything, work with him around the clock. His girlfriend was actually a Taekwondo champion, very nice at that time. And so I was teaching all those guys and choosing them to get into Mortal Kombat, you know, per se. So I was not supposed to be one of the actors, you know. I didn't have time. I was not interested. And eventually, for some reason, they wanted to have my ranks, my titles. So it was kind of weird on a set. Everybody's pulling, oh, I'm the highest title, oh, I'm the highest rank. And I said, they never said anything to me because I'm there and they're here. And it's okay. I don't give a damn about it. So the ego was big. It was big ego and nice people and people less nice. And eventually, I played Sub-Zero because, Larry asked me to do Sub-Zero. I said, okay, I will do Sub-Zero. The problem we had is I wanted to choreograph my own thing, okay?
Okay.
It's very complicated. I did 10 years of ballet in the Opéra of Paris. So I like choreography. I like the real deal. Okay. I was a special force. I was in war in Africa, you know, so I know what I'm talking about. Yep. And I'm very, very martial. I'm not going there and here. This is my life. I will die with it. This is what I do for a living besides being a doctor, which is a part of it.
Yeah.
So I was very strict, very hard with that. And being the oldest on the set also. And so I put a choreography that I really liked with my two assistants, and they didn't pick it up. It was too complicated. So it's okay. We did another one, and I stopped at that. I don't want to be. We did another one, and it was not good. Okay, it's not good. It's not good. I mean, I did quite a lot of other movie, a lot of demonstration and things. That was not really good. My fight was not good because it was not a fight. You know, if you look at good fights, if you look at good martial art movie, like in Indonesia, I lived in Indonesia for 7 years, Knights is Coming for Me or things like this. Amazing fight, you know, amazing fight. And those fights are okay, they're just okay. But at that time, that was the best that it was. Because you have to remember, this is almost 30 years ago. No one ever did it before. Yeah. Only Bruce Lee did it. But Bruce Lee is not America. You know, Bruce Lee was somewhere else. And it was Kung Fu. This is not Kung Fu. And it's a mixture of things.
Well, if it's any consolation, Francois, I got to say, even though it was short and sweet, it was very effective. It was fun to watch. The music complemented it perfectly.
Super funny.
I love that flip on the wall. Your movements were so authentic and incredible. I thought you just did brilliant.
It could have been a lot better, but it's okay. And it makes me happy because I gave a lot of blood, a lot of time for this movie, and it helped a lot of people. And Kari Tagawa was one of my best friends, my student, private student.
Oh, wow.
And a very nice guy. I knew him for a long time. And he's actually very high level. At that time, he was already a fourth dan in karate and fifth dan in jiu-jitsu at that time. And he was my student for years. And then Chris is a very, very strong. Chris Kasamasa is very good at what he's doing. there's good people, and yep. I will stop at that. But it was, I'm happy to have been a part of it because it was a gageure. It was really a gamble. Okay. Mm-hmm. It took forever and reshooting because it was never good enough. And Anderson Paul did a very good job. It was his first martial art movie. He was swimming a little bit, but which is normal because he was surrounded by things he didn't have a clue about. And he did a very good job. He's a great director.
Yeah.
So everything went well. It could have, according to what we had, it could have got better. It was impossible, you know, because it was new to Hollywood. It never happened before. So we made a lot of mistakes. And I'm happy that the first fight was my fight because they found out that they can make better. So all the fights later was better than mine. And it makes me happy because if I had been only fights like mine that were really so-so, it would have been bad. So it went on better and better and better as it goes. So that was great.
The two fights that they added in later on were absolutely breathtaking. Yeah,
that was a year and a half later. That was a long time after. They recalled them because they find out they have to do something better, more up to date, using a little bit more stance and more choreography and more, you know, roses around the plot, you know. And they did it, and it's good, you know. I teach people how to kill. I don't teach people how to do this very different. You know, So I'm a nice guy, but, I went to war.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
It's a big difference with the others, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's okay because I appreciate what they did, and I like it. And everybody was very nice. The DP, Leonetti. Yeah. Fabulous DP. I mean, really, Paul Anderson knew who to surround himself with. And I mean, he was amazing. Leonetti was really an amazing DP. And excellent. He really helped the movie all the way. So it was good. Because you have to remember, that was the first time, like I said before. First time. You make mistake, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There you go. Did you have much of an influence over Sub-Zero in the film?
Yes and no. We didn't have time. It was the first fight, and we were a bit lost in time, and still trying to go around everything that was happening, and there was a lot of. Wheels to roll. It was a heavy thing, you know. I had to teach, I had to train, I had to choreograph, I had to talk to Kasanovs, I tried to him, the others, you know. It was so, and like I told you, I rehearsed a fight with my two assistants. One was world champion karate Shotokan, Maurice Nero, and the other one, Dominic Vandenberg, who did 9 movies. And he was world champion. He was an ex-French Foreign Legion guy. And it was maybe the best martial artist in the world at that time. And I chose him to be the Baraka. If you remember in a movie, when we are in this big hole and suddenly they're throwing all the tables and everything around.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm coming. And it's a Baraka coming. Well, that was him. Dominic Vandenberg is going the Marashini air. Okay, that's
kind of like the guards, yeah.
And I chose him, and they were not very happy. I said, I chose him because he's the best. I didn't know the guy. And then after the show, I took him as one of my assistants, actually, because he was that good. And then he made a lot of movies after that.
But he did
all the fights of the Gang of New York.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, you know, wow. Because he was really, really good. He knew what he was doing. So him and Maurice Nero, who was world champion karate, Shotokan, we did a choreography, 3 of us, and it took us about a week, but it was crazy, okay? It was hard, and it was a lot of, hard. And I think they got scared. I think they got scared. I think they said, this is too complicated. This is too complicated. This is not Hollywood. Wow. And I think they reviewed later, thinking about, maybe I was right. And that's what they tried to do much later by making the fights much less Hollywood and more Asian. And that's what they did. Yeah. And for them, they opened the door to real martial art movies later on, you know. Yeah. And but with my personal fight, that was still Hollywood John Wayne thing. You know what I mean? It was okay, but it was slow. We were careful. We don't want to go there. We don't want to hurt him. It was the beginning of the movie. What about if I give a punch to Liu Kang and you know, to Robin Chu and I hurt him or whatever? Robin saw what we're doing, and he was a bit like this. He said, those guys, this is a real deal, you know? And I never made a movie before. And I'm teaching the special forces, I'm teaching the SEALs, I'm teaching the Legion, you know? So they're making a movie. And at the Gold Gym and my dojo, I'm teaching world champions. So it's very different from a movie with everything is thinking what they are is not really true, you know? So you have to process the whole thing and make it with a lot of sugar, you know, inside of the coffee.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was the problem we had with my fight. We were not ready for it. We were not ready to deliver something that was delivered later.
Yeah.
Yeah, so excluding that fight in particular, if you really had to think about it, what would you say was the one moment that really tested your abilities during the making of this film?
It was not the fight per se. It was more the teaching and finding the right people for it.
Yeah.
And then it was, like I told you, something that is happening behind the scene. You know, something you don't really see. It's like all this going after each other, the ego and everything. I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm coming from here, I'm coming from... And they're all young, you know? And I got to give you something, okay? Arriving in the office, okay, in the main office of the production, of the line production, there was a big blackboard, kind of, a big board. Okay. And you had all the principals, okay, with who they are, where they're coming from, the rank, the titles, what they did. And like basically once a week, the title was changing. The ranks were changing. So one day I said, stop. You cannot get another Dan in 1 week, another title in 1 week. I mean, it doesn't happen. That was because the ego was there, you know. Yeah. And it's okay. I understand it. This is Hollywood. This is not real.
Yeah.
So I was not used to that. So I was a bit like, what's going on here? But me, they never touched me. No one said anything to me. I think they were a bit scared. You know, it's like, if you know, don't push him too much. The guy is different. First of all, I'm older. My rank is higher. You know, they where I'm coming from. They don't say too much. But they were nice people. It's just between them. They just, you know the way it is in Hollywood. It's different. It's a different thing, you know. And you know, it went like this for a while. Then it stopped, and he stopped on his own. And then they were working hard, and everybody was on board later on. You know, at the beginning was a lot of fighting. You know, and then everybody went on board after. And they had prime with Goro. The thing was not working really well. You know, of course, there's always problem happening. But everybody did his best, and we were surrounded. We were at the three main guys, you know, we are really, really good at it. Like, you know, Paul was really good, Anderson was really good, smart. And I remember I met him before the movie, and he asked me so many questions, you know, because he never did martial art in his life. So we talked about that much before anybody was hired, you know.
Wow.
And we're talking about who we're going to hire and everything. It's that was prior to making the movie. So that's much behind the scene before production. This is a pre-production. It's a pre-production.
Yeah. So even though time was very constricted, originally, was there any concepts or scenes discussed that was involving Sub-Zero that just couldn't make the cut of the film?
I don't really know. You know, the script was changing all the time because it was so big, and they had to observe a certain time frame. You know that. You know the way it
works. Yeah.
Certain time frame. And so, and it was so many characters, so many things happening and subplots, and plots and subplot of the subplot. So the time was like overextended every day. So they have to rewrite the whole thing all the time. So the Sub-Zero, I think the Sub-Zero thing opened the door to everything else. For example, when I do the first fight with Dominique, you know, and I freeze him. So this is really it starts. It starts there, you know, and then from there, even the lighting, the set, everything was coming from that, you know, and then the ball was starting to roll, you know, it was starting to roll better and better and better and better. I wish it could have been better on my part, you know. I wish I could have done a bit more, but they did with Chris, and Chris is great. He did a good job. Reptile came much later, you know, much later. It was not supposed to be a Reptile at all. Came later, and he did a good job. I don't remember his name. He did very well also.
Keith Cook.
Yeah, very, very good, very good. I met him a couple of times. Chris, of course, we were every day. I'm not going to talk about everybody, you know, about martial art, but it's okay. And it went well. I think when you have something that has never been done and you have to do it within a certain Tommy Parton, it's very complicated. It's very difficult. Even more so, it's something that is new to Hollywood. It was really a gamble. I think it was a gamble. And it did very well. The music was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
The score was phenomenal. Yeah. It helped tremendously. The lighting is phenomenal. I mean, what the DP did was phenomenal. The way he shot, the angles, all this is like a lot of pluses coming from all over the place, you know. So the name is phenomenal. Mortal Kombat, you know, imagine the name, just the title. It's fantastic. And I was promoting it too. I went to a lot of different shows all over America to promote it before it was done. So after everything, it was good. I'm very proud of it. Of course, after, you know, you could have done that better. You could have done that better, but you did it. Okay.
Yeah.
Now we
know. Always the way.
You're learning from the process, you know?
Yeah. So, when it came to your filming your scenes, did you sort of come up with anything on the fly or that ended up sticking in the movie, or was it all sort of, spoken about beforehand?
Well, these things I'm not going to tell you about, you know, they're really not proper to talk about it, and it's my problem and problem of a few other guys that were fixed later. I was not a happy camper all the time, okay? I think, like I told you before, when I came up with the choreography and was really different, but it was too much for the beginning. I think it was too much. Angles of shooting, and I had everything in my mind, you know, because of ballet, being on stage for so many times, so many demonstrations. And like I told you, I demonstrated with 10, 15, 20 people, you know, and teaching for so long. So I knew exactly, and so I was explaining Leonetti and everything, and Leonetti liked it, actually, I remember. The angles coming in and how to use this and this and this and this. But it was too much. I think it was too much for the first fight. Because if you think about it, my fight is the first fight. Real fight, because Johnny Cage was shot later, you know, Lindy Ashby, and it was done later with, and who was the other one? Someone, but it was shot later. So the first fight that came before we decided it's going to be in a movie was my fight. Okay, then other fights were coming in. So they learn, and we all learn the mistake that we did or the good things that we did. Okay, so you learn more from your mistake than you learn from the good things, you know. That's what it's supposed to be. And and I think Leonetti and Paul Anderson really, really are smart guys. They knew what they were doing. They're professionals. Even Paul was very young, though, but he's really smart. He understood right away. I mean, you know, it's a pleasure to work with people like that. So there was key people that were the, and that's why I like Larry Kazanoff. What he did in choosing the key people, he was smart. Now, the relation I had with him, that was another aspect of the show, okay? But he did, he was smart. He was a smart guy on choosing the right key people. Mm-hmm. Now, it was, you know, some laundry to wash on the side.
Did you happen to keep anything at all from the set?
Yeah, a few things, but not too much. I don't even know what happened to my suit. I have no idea what happened to my suit. I think it was sold to a Hard Rock Cafe, I think, but I'm not sure. I think so, yeah. But I'm not sure. But I don't know. I mean, I kept a few things, but not too much. Not too much. I keep bruises. Yeah, a lot of bruises. But not ego bruises, real bruises.
The good ones. Did you happen to have a chance to check out any of the newer games since, you know, back then?
You know, I never played games in my life.
No?
Never. That's the only time I played a game was with that Larry Kazanoff and Paul Anderson.
Wow.
In the arcade, almost 30 years ago.
Wow.
Imagine three of us, you know, in the arcade in Santa Monica playing with this thing. I mean, it's crazy if you think, because it was nothing else but the arcade, you know. It was very strange. And then he said, okay, look, Sub-Zero, Scorpio. And everybody was Sub-Zero, Scorpio, Sub-Zero, Scorpio, Sub-Zero, Scorpio. That was it. They didn't even know what was the other characters, you know, because they did the survey. Oh, no, only Sub-Zero, only Scorpio, only Sub-Zero. Okay. So that's why Scorpio, you know, of course, Chris is really good because he's talented, because that was the key person, you know. And I think also for the sake of promotion and the sake of truth and veracity about the movie and who is in the movie, I think they use a little bit my ranks, which is okay. It's a part of it. But they want to have something, you know, they can, okay, Gold Jim, he's here, he's older, he's a master, okay, you know. And that's okay. It's a part of the show, you know. So it's cool. I think it was a cool movie. It did very well. People loved it. You know, we were number one in America for 3 weeks in a row.
Yep, it's true.
That never happened before. Number one in America for 3 weeks? This is crazy. I mean, this is to show, you know, what it was. And I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of it.
It paid off. Yeah. Do you still have anybody out there recognize you for your work, Francois, on the movie?
Yes. Yes. But, you know, I was talking to Zach about it, because all this is completely new. Zach called me out of the blue. I didn't know Zach 10 days ago. Okay. And then I got a WhatsApp. I live in Spain, in Andalusia. You know, no one has my number. No one. I keep low profile. You know, I just train for myself. Every now and then, I do a demonstration. I do a lecture in another country. You know, as a martial artist, not as Sub-Zero. As you know, and I love it. And the gym I'm training at, which is huge and beautiful, no one knew that was Sub-Zero. No one knew about anything, but they knew I'm a master in martial art. That's it. You know, because there's a lot of martial artists, a lot of guys, and they're all coming bow at me. I don't even know their name, nothing, you know. But then they know who I am, because some of the dojos have my pictures in it in Netherlands or in Switzerland or in Italy or in France. They have a picture of me as a master on the wall, but not a Sub-Zero, you know. Then they find out I was Sub-Zero, 10 days ago? Something. It freaked them out. Now everybody's coming to me in the gym. You Sub-Zero? What? It is so strange. So I was telling Zach, I have more recognition of being Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat, the original one, than being a world champion, or being, you know, a ninth dan in jiu-jitsu and karate. It's like, or being practicing for 67 years, you know. It's like, wow, this is amazing. So anyway, Zach sent me a WhatsApp 10 days ago. He said, you would be interested in calling me and coming to Comic Cons for fans and everything. And first of all, I was very surprised because how did you get my phone number? It's like, wow, amazing. So the first thing I said, how did you get my phone number? Yeah. He's a great guy. And he said, don't talk to me about it. It was a nightmare. Really? Okay. So anyway, we talk now and he signed me up. And we're going to do Comic Cons together. And
wow.
And then he said, oh, by the way, you know, you guys want to have me on the show. You want to come or not? So absolutely. I love that. You know, of course, if you have fans and smart people doing for Mortal Kombat, I'm doing it right away. But, you know, it's different because you're young compared to me. You could be my sons, you know. And but it's true. You know, it's true. And the thing is, but you smart guys, you're doing a great job. You love what you're doing, and you're talented and what you're doing. It's a pleasure. You know, I don't look at you as competition. I look at you as people who are happening. You're happening, and I like that. I like to give a little bit of my the edge I have from living the life in all this world, and you know, good and bad, and seeing people who really made a difference. I like that. You know, it's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure for us too, don't you worry. So I know you're quite busy these days, but did you happen to see the newest Mortal Kombat movie at all?
I got to tell you something. I want to watch it and I don't want to watch it.
I can see.
Scorpio is played by a Japanese martial artist. Very good, very talented. My wife is Japanese, and even her doesn't know. She does Aikido. She's a black belt of Aikido.
Oh, wow.
And she knows he's very famous in Japan. He's a very great guy. And I don't know if I want to see it, if I don't want to see it. Eventually, this 51 against 49, I might, I'm sure I'm going to watch it. But it's difficult. So far, I only saw 5 minutes of him, and he's good. He's very good. It's well edited, very well edited, good editing. The problem I have with new movies, I'm going to tell you, is too much editing. It's too much. It's almost fake. It's like, give me a break, okay? You want to fight with me? It's going to last 1 second, you know, and that's the problem. Okay. And how many are you? One? Come on, give me a break. Come at 10 at me and then we're going to have a talk. It's a different, it's different. And so I want to see it for the sake of because it's Mortal Kombat, you know, and it's a pleasure. But in the same time, it makes me sad a little bit. You understand what I mean?
Sure. I know where you're coming from.
You understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, steering away from Mortal Kombat, when it comes to you, Francois, as you've mentioned before, I believe you were special ops in the Army in 1971.
Yeah.
A lot of tragic, a lot of gnarly events sort of had taken place here. Would you be open at all to sharing some of the stories with our audiences? Or something you'd prefer to avoid at this time?
Well, I can tell you what I was doing. I was Black Ops. I was extraction team, okay? So in 72, 7th BCA, which is doesn't exist any longer. It was working for NATO, okay? Under the umbrella of the French Foreign Legion, because the French Foreign Legion 50 years ago was the first force being sent for extraction or special ops of different countries because wars, you know, there's so many small wars everywhere. Yeah. And so I was in Africa. I was in Nigeria. And I was supposed to go to Vietnam, and the last second they sent me to Nigeria. Why? I never heard of Nigeria in my life. So I find myself over there in West Africa, and I spent enough time like this training different teams, special teams, and doing extraction in the Delta, in Somalia, in Sudan, And I got wounded like everybody else, spending 5 months in a vet hospital. But training people, you know, you special ops, you special forces, we're talking about the early 70s, you know, almost 50 years ago. Yeah. There's no internet, there's no telephone, there's no mobile phone, there's no computer, there's no telephone, there's nothing. You have a map and a pencil. And you better know when they put you in a jungle from a helicopter and they say, there's 50 nuns to recuperate from the father of Boko Haram, you know, and you have to go. You have to go.
Man,
oh, and it's very chance to come back, you know, very little chance to come back. And we came back. And not all of them, and a few of them come back. And then we did quite a few operations like this. So I don't want to talk more because it makes me sad and I feel like crying.
Absolutely,
absolutely.
But, I'm proud of what I did. A lot of respect.
I'm proud of what I did. And
good.
I think about it all the time. You know, I couldn't sleep for 22 years. And, you know, like every soldier who's been in war, even at that time, we didn't know what it was when we were affected. And what saved me is martial art. I was a POW, and what saved me is the discipline of practicing, of focusing, you know, and the power you have inside of you. And I don't meditate. I never meditate in my life. Okay, so don't make me a martial artist meditating because I don't know how to meditate. I just put the power inside myself, and you know, I break concrete and things like this. it's a different approach. That, you know, in the samurai world, and I have a title of samurai. I'm Kaiden Shihan, which is a title of samurai, and my we only two white person in the world to have the title, and the other one is French also. His name is Dominique Valérard. He was 18-time world champion in karate. And he's captain of the national French team in the 60s and early 70s. And, you know, it's the dream of the samurai is called Aga Kure. It's the death that hides itself or herself in the forest. And that's the samurai, you don't see him until he kills you. And that's Aga Kure. And my whole life, I dedicated my life to Aga Kure. So but it's not meditation. And I mean, I have no problem with people meditating. I think it's great. I don't, because I don't know how. I never was taught how. You know, when you had a master who is 85, 86 years old, and you're 6 years old or 5 years old, and he tells you, we don't warm up. Okay, we don't warm up. Never. Yeah. I never warm up. Even now, at my age, I never warm up.
Really?
And I train all the time.
Wow.
And I say, what? He said, because this is what happened to my father. And his father was a samurai in the early 19th century. Imagine. Mm-hmm. He was in a tent and he got attacked on a battlefield. And he's going to say at 1 o'clock in the morning, excuse me, can we have 10 minutes to warm up? And he say, you have no time to kill your enemy. Don't tell him to warm up. So that's the way. I don't have the time to meditate.
It's amazing.
The only meditating part of Aga Kure is to meditate on the best and the most honorific way of killing your opponent. That's the meditation of the samurai. Honor, fast, speed, and clean. It's different. It's not a sport. It is not a sport. That's why it was forbidden in Japan after World War II, because it's a part of the army. And I was raised by that mentality. I was raised through this understanding that martial art is an art of war. It's not an art of sport. And I respect all the people doing sport. I mean, Ken Shamrock was a very good friend of mine. Dan the Beast Severin. You know, I work with Vince McMahon. He had a UFC and everything. I know all of them. And they're great guy. You know, Tito Ortiz, they're great guy. And I respect what they're doing. They're great combatant. But this is not my cup of tea. I'm not interested. It's completely different. But it doesn't make less or better. It's just something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to say the last movie you were involved in, I think you slightly mentioned already back in 2010. It was called Swishbucklers. Yes. I watched the trailer. It looks absolutely hysterical, and I'm very excited to tune into it myself shortly. I believe you were an executive producer. What specifically piqued your interest with this project, and do you have any plans to work with the movie?
My best friend and my partner was the producer of Demolition Man. He lives in Malaga, actually, and he was a student of mine with Stallone a long time ago, and he's my best friend, in fact, my brother, and he lives in Malaga. He moved out of the States, and now he's very close to us. Anyway, he shot quite a few movies, and the last movie he was shooting was called First Strike, and I'm the lead role in First Strike, and it's a military movie, you know, about a terrorist. I'm playing the terrorist. I'm always a bad guy for some reason. Anyway, so during the movie, you're gonna love it. There is a love scene in this particular. You're gonna understand why we did Swishbuckler. There's a love scene, and all the guys are my students. They're all my students in this movie. Oh. All of them, and a few of them are fight choreographers in Hollywood and other movies. Few of them. They did the Three Musketeers and everything. I mean, they're really great guys and real martial artists. A lot of them. We have no money for doing movie, have a little money. So anyway, there's a sex scene in a warehouse in the mountain of Santa Monica. Okay. And it's freezing. And my butt is freezing. I'm frozen. And this guy who is my main assistant in the movie knocks on the door and says, "Sir, we're under attack." And I say, "So I'm supposed to wake up from the bed, get out, go and see him and say, make sure the guys are ready." Okay, so one scene, two scene, three scene, four. I'm like this. I'm frozen. So the last scene, I'm saying to my friend Steven, who is doing thing, I say, I can't. I just can't. Oh. I mean, so I go and see him, and my friend sees me, open the door, and say, "Are you okay?" I say, "No, I can't do it anymore." He said, "We should do a gay movie. At least you get it warm." I say, okay, why not? And then 6 months later, I'm raising the money to produce a movie, create the movie called Swishbuckler, which is, a swashbuckler. It's a guy like this. A swish is moving like this. You know what I mean? So we started a movie, and everybody is gay in a movie. For real. For real, I'm the only fake one with the three other guys because of the Three Musketeers. Okay, so I'm playing D'Artagnan. I created the movie. I produced the movie. I executive produced the movie. I co-wrote the movie, and I'm starring in the movie. And this is a few million dollars movie. It's not a cheap thing. And actually, we 4.5 star on Amazon. and we shot the movie, and it's whacked. It's completely whacked.
And I love
it's
that.
It's crazy.
On the trailer.
It's crazy. So that was the story of my Swishbuckler.
Yeah, on the trailer, I've seen somebody fighting, sword fighting with like a pig.
A lot of sword fighting. a lot of fights. And we're learning, the whole movie is learning how to be gay. And I'm not supposed to be an actor, so I cannot act. I cannot do anything. And I have to learn how to be gay, be an actor in a movie. And it's completely crazy, and it's great music. Great, the guy who did the music of Peter Sellers, the Pink Panther, and it's great. I mean, we had a good time. That was my last movie in 2008, 2009, and it was released in 2010. And since then, I was supposed to do two movies, but with COVID, it was canceled. So that's it.
Oh, yeah. Wow! Do you ever plan to be in the movie industry again?
Very brutal mercenary thing in the 13th century, and the other one was a TV show, and everything was canceled because of COVID. So we're trying also something else now.
Wow!
Hopefully,
yeah.
But Swishbuckler, you're gonna have a good time. I think it's a funny one. It's a funny one, and it's martial art, and you're real people.
Cherry on top,
world champion for real. And I did ballet, so imagine.
All right, so we are now going to jump to the last segment of the show, and it is called
Final Round.
Tell me.
So what we're going to do for this final round is we're just going to ask you a few quick questions, Francois. I'll try to get to know you a little bit more.
Okay.
And so the first question being, what is your favorite food?
My favorite food? Cheese. French cheese. French cheese and Japanese food.
Yum.
Oh, brilliant. Some of your secret talents.
Well, I think I'm a good dancer, you know, 10 years in the Opera of Paris, coming from a family of dancers. Martial art is my life, so it's not a talent, it's my dedication for my life, so I don't count it as a... And I ski a lot. Okay. I was in Espoir of the French national ski team, so I ski a lot.
Excellent. That's it. If you had to pick your all-time favorite movie.
Samurai 7, Kurosawa.
Ah.
Samurai 7, Kurosawa. That was my favorite movie.
What's your guilty pleasure? Your guilty pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
There we go.
Francois, what was your very first job?
My first job was a teacher. Okay. Martial art. I was 16 years old, and the same week when I turned 16, I got my 3 black belt: judo, karate, jiu-jitsu. Wow. That was in 67.
Mm-hmm.
January 67, and I got my 3 belts in the same week. And as soon as I got my black belt, I could teach. So I was teaching beginners, you know, and then. 4 years, then after I didn't have time because I had to go to med school and everything, and it was 68, revolution, it was complicated, and then, you know, the pre-army classes and everything, and competition, and learning, and, but teaching was my first job.
Okay.
Wow. What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I guess, you know, depending on the country, depending upon the country you're in, you know, because I was all over the world. And I think the best thing is being humble and be true to yourself, you know, being humble and true to yourself, not Certainly. Pretending what you are not. And if you do wrong, you're wrong. If you're right, you're right. But don't lie to yourself, you know. You look in the mirror, you're alone with it, and see who you are.
Very well said.
Nice. So you're obviously very well traveled. So if you really had to think about it, of everywhere you've been in the world, what is your favorite place and why?
Japan.
I haven't been, but I really want to go.
You know, it's not because my wife
Bucket
is
list.
Japanese. It's
just yeah,
because
absolutely.
Okay, you know, when you go, I've been all over, I mean, all over, a lot of countries, even Ukraine. you go from another country, it's another country. It's different. You go to Japan, it's another world. It's another planet. And not because, okay, I cannot be 100% true to myself when I say that because I was raised by Japanese. Okay, and because my wife is Japanese and because I do Japanese martial art for a living. And I'm a medical doctor in Japan, so it is. I cannot be real true to my concept, but it's still Japan is number one for me.
Fantastic.
Because they're so polite, so respectful, so disciplined. So there's something that doesn't exist in the other country, or doesn't exist any longer in the other country. You know, they might have been there. You know, when you're older, like I am. And you see what it was in the 60s or early 70s and what it is now, it makes me cry, you know.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And here's the last question. And this one often stumps many of our guests, but what is the funniest thing that has ever happened to you?
Well, it's weird because it's not politically correct. But... It's after the last movie I did, you know, I had to make people thought I was gay.
Oh,
and I
legitimately,
was trying to prove that was not. That was weird. And then eventually it went away. But that was believe me, it sounds stupid, but it's true, you know? And so it was strange to me. It's like living somewhere else, because even when I was in the opera, you know, and I was surrounded, and but I was in the 50s, you know, 60s, didn't happen to me. But that, because I did this movie, and all my friends, 90% of them were gay, you know, and yes, my patients were gay. And so a lot of people that were like us, I mean, I assume, you know, look at me and say, really? You, no, I'm not. I'm just who I am. But they couldn't believe me at that time. Huh? Not now. Wow. It's different now. But at that time, it was a different world. And they were looking at me saying, sure, this is weird. They think I was weird because I was always with the gay people, you know. Mm. For other reason, you know. Now it's different. Now I don't like it at all. This is crazy. I don't like it. But that's my problem, you know. Maybe because I'm too old, I don't like it. But at that time, it was different. It was different. And then the other thing, I live with a lot of culpability. I live, you know, it's not because you did something wrong, but because I was not good enough. And so it's two different kinds of being responsible and culpable. When I was in the army, I was ranked, you know, and I had to give order, and I lost people because of maybe bad orders, and that follows me to this very day. And that was 50 years ago, 48 years ago, and I'm going to have to live my few years more like this. You know, it's just, it's something you cannot explain, something that is a part of who you are, and maybe it makes me more humble, you know, mm-hmm. And martial art too makes me humble. You know, when you get older, when you're young, you're all over the place. But when you're older, and you merge better than before, much better than you were before. But then you much cooler, you much more humble about it. You know, mm-hmm. that's the two things.
Very good. So, Francois, this has been absolutely fantastic. Before we leave today, is there any particular project that you're working on? I think you did art, as well, did you not?
No, I didn't. I didn't. Well, art, yeah, ballet. That's it. But otherwise, no. Okay. I did. I did movies. I was the head of Gold's Gym Martial Arts for the world, and I was a doctor for WWF. And that's it. So many other, okay. And yeah, all the martial art that you're not 24 hours was not enough. But no, I never did art. I'm not good at it. I wish I'd be good at it, but I'm not. And I'm very lucky that I have my wife, you know, that is so helpful and I love so much. And I have a daughter also. I haven't seen her for a long time, but older. She's beautiful, but that's it, you know.
Is there anything at all that you'd like to promote or anything you'd like to tell all your fans right now before we go?
Well, we want to do Comic-Con with Zach. So I did two already, but it was the first two one in Gibraltar. So the first time they called me and they said, can you help us doing this and this? And so I helped them, but I didn't know what it was. It was the very beginning of their thing in Gibraltar. I did two because I did a TV show over there and lecture, you know, on TV. Talking, it's called Talking Movie. So they came to me and asked me, but I was something on the side. Then since Zach told me, I thought about it, and I think it would be great if I can do a comic con and talk to people about life and the way it is, and Mortal Kombat and martial art. And why not? Absolutely, I love it.
This is what we like to hear. We're all very, very excited, Francois.
Well, I'm gonna tell you guys. I mean, it's a pleasure to be with you. Not everybody is smart nowadays, and when I meet smart young people like you guys, this is great. This is, and you know what you're talking about. You know what you're saying. You're not fake. I hate fake people. And you're not fake.
Tell me about it.
No, it's true. I hate fake people. I mean, I just I'm very rigid, you know. And when I see people who know what it's saying, they don't try to put you in a ditch. You know, they just, you know, they take you for who you are, and this is great. This is unusual. because I do a lot of show, nothing to do with the kind of show that you're doing, a lecture for alumni, you know, and university and things like this. And so it's different. But this is a pleasure. This is really something that comes from my heart. And I can't lie. I don't lie. Something has to stop, not to go too far. But that's who I am. I don't give a damn about it if people are not happy about it. You know, it's their problem.
Yeah.
It means a lot. It really does.
Well, it means everything, man. Yeah. Okay, well, it's been a real pleasure, and we can't wait to speak to you again, Francois, and
absolutely.
We wish you all the best with everything.
Absolutely.
Well, me too. I wish you all the best for everything you're doing, and obviously you're doing so well. Good for you guys.
Thank Us. You.
In Japan, we say, Us. respect and success.
Fantastic.
Oh, I love it. And there we have it. We've spoken to the man who literally has the ability to freeze audiences in their tracks. Francois has been through a number of things and has succeeded in some impressive ways throughout his life thus far. It's been a lot of fun, and we truly hope that you've enjoyed this episode immensely. We have a pleasant surprise coming up shortly, as we can assure you, Kamidogu is far from being done. Be on the lookout, combatants. You know the deal. Have fun, stay safe, and
stay flawless.